Well, good morning. Today is a day that I find it difficult to preach because I'm preaching not only to fathers and about fathers, but I'm preaching as a father. And it is it's one of those days where it's there's certain sermons that you look forward to. I particularly, as a preacher, I look forward to Easter. And I look forward to the Christmas season. I look forward to anticipation to Mother's Day, even though that's a difficult sermon also. But not so much Father's Day, and for a lot of reasons. But you know, Father's Day is something that it's a great day to celebrate, and it's a great day to honor our fathers. But it's sort of, in a lot of ways, takes a back seat, especially to Mother's Day. I mean, we just had Mother's Day not too long ago, and certainly there is a lot of similarities, but there's some striking differences between Father's Day and Mother's Day. And it's one of those things as we look at Father's Day and we look at Father's Day versus Mother's Day, there are some things that we have to look at as some comparisons that you see. I came across a lot of facts that I thought were very curious. When you look at the two, Father's Day isn't as played up and as marketed as Mother's Day is. You know, Mother's Day is the busiest day for the phone company. More phone calls are made on Mother's Day than any other day of the year. But Father's Day is more lucrative for the phone company because more collect calls are made on Father's Day than any other day of the year. So they're busier on one day, but they make more money on the other. Mother's Day is the second busiest day for florists, only behind Valentine's Day. No men wear flowers. Mother's Day is the second most attended Sunday. And on average, Americans spend 35% less on Father's Day than they do on Mother's Day. Now, I'm not saying all that to say that one is better than the other, or oh, poor, pitiful, this or that or the other. But I'm just saying that there are differences. That fathers, for some reason, even the day is a little less significant than Mother's Day. And there's no escaping the importance of fathers and good godly men. Even though that on that day when we call our dads collect, or when maybe the gift isn't as extravagant, or certainly there are no flowers or not as many, but there is no escaping the reality that fathers are so important. More than 8 out of 10 career criminals come from a fatherless home, or come from a home where there was no positive male role model. In this country, we are producing the most biblically illiterate generation that we have ever seen. And it's because that fathers, by and large, are not taking their responsibility and teaching their children, as Proverbs says, training them up in the way that they should go. And it's a fact that kids today from the 18 to 25-year-old are the most biblically illiterate generation that we've ever produced. And the generation behind them from 17 to elementary school is even worse. Because men aren't taking the lead in teaching children. If you watch today, if you watch television very often, my kids watch Nickelodeon and they see TV shows where their family is depicted. And more than anything, fathers are depicted in a very negative light. They're incompetent in most things. They're bumbling idiots, as it were. They're just, morally lacking. And the children have to come in and save the day most of the time. Fathers are depicted as lazy and unintelligent and immature. And so today on Father's Day, in the midst of a society that sees fathers as couch potatoes who only care about how to operate a remote control, and where fathers are mocked and the very position of fatherhood is being neglected, and the society is only mirroring what is in television and movies is only mirroring what is happening. In a time where that is the norm, I stand before a room. I stand before in a room before men who are part of the solution and not the problem. It's my honor to stand here this morning in front of a room full of men who are not what society depicts them as. Who are absolutely the opposite of that. They're not absentee fathers. They're not gone all the time. They're not morally lacking. They're not biblically illiterate and passing that on. But I stand in a room with men who are making a difference, and it is an honor. And this morning, instead of making all of the jokes about, well, we just want to see what, game is on, and about the lazy boy or the remote control and all of those things that might have just a grain of truth, because we all like our downtime and they have just a kernel of truth. But for the most part, I want to honor men this morning. As I look out at this audience, I'm proud to be part of men who are truly changing this world one relationship at a time. Who are changing a generation that might be biblically illiterate, but we're making a difference. We're in a room that's teaching the generation to come that there is a God, and He is more real than we will ever know, and His Word is true. It's meaningful. It's substantial. It is significant. And we're teaching our children those things. Fatherhood is difficult at best. It's a challenge. It's one that is worthy of being honored. So this morning, I want to honor our fathers for some very specific reasons. I want to honor the men of this congregation, those who have their own children and have fathered them, and those who have fathered and mentored and taught children that don't belong to them. I want to honor men this morning. The first reason that I honor the men of this congregation is for the responsibility that they have. I honor you for your responsibility. We're called to be shepherds, not only shepherds of the Lord's congregation, but we're called to be shepherds of our own homes and shepherds of a community. And shepherds lead. Shepherds are out in front. They're not like cowboys driving the herd from behind. They're not hollering out commands and whipping them and making people go in a direction because of fear. But shepherds are out front and they're leading by example. They have a responsibility to go before and to experience what is out there before those who they are leading. And I stand in a room full of men who are willing to do that. Who are willing to go out and find pasture. Who are willing to go out and find water. Who are willing to go out and find sustenance and provision for those under their care. And to face the dangers beforehand. In Psalm 127, verse 3 through 5 is one of the greatest passages about fatherhood and about being a man of God and leading. And he says, "Children are a heritage from the Lord, a reward from Him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full." Speaking as a father whose quiver is full and running over, they are a blessing, truly a responsibility. I love the wording that he uses there. He doesn't, when the Bible is written, when God is inspiring those who were to write down His Word, He uses very specific words for very specific reason. And He calls into mind not just an image, but He calls into mind situations simply by the words that He uses. And He calls us, He says, "Children are like arrows in the hands of a warrior." He could have used any language He wanted to there. He could have said, "Children are like tools in the hand of a carpenter. Children are like pencils in the hand of an artist." He could have used any kind of imagery that he wanted, but he chose arrows in the hands of a warrior because he knew that because we live in a fallen world, we are at war. And I stand in a room with men who acknowledge that very fact. That this is serious yet risky business, this war that we are fighting. Men who accept the responsibility not to hide their heads in the sand and neglect the fact that this is serious stuff. You see, a warrior is the last line of defense. Because when you're called to battle, when there's an enemy coming, it's time to fight. I mean, it's time to put up or shut up. Godly men aren't afraid to fight. Fight back Satan. Fight back evil. Fight back ignorance from one generation to another. To fight back all of the things that would separate God from His people. And His warriors unafraid to stand that ground. I'm honored to be a part of men who acknowledge the fight. I'm honored to be a part of men who have made the gates of hell shake and fall in areas where lesser men would simply give up. Where lesser men would say, it isn't worth it. Where lesser men would say, you know, the politically correct thing to do is to just go along and get along. Where lesser men would just blend into the woodwork, but not you guys willing to stand and fight. And it's an honor because of that great responsibility. I honor men today because of your example. The example that is given to from one generation to the next. You know, it's a difficult thing to lead, not only because you're out in front and you have to face those dangers and fight those fights before anyone else. But you see, it's a difficult thing to lead because when you are in the lead, you are silhouetted against a setting sun where more arrows and slings and where it's easier to take a shot. You see, when you are out in front, when most people can see you, your actions are intensified. Your actions are seen. There's nowhere to hide. And men, you understand that in your family, in your community, in the positions of leadership that you are placed in, by the nature of who you are, so often, too often, there's nowhere to hide. Faults are magnified. Mistakes are exaggerated. And it's an honor to be able to follow great examples like the men in this room. The greatest example that we have that we're commanded, Ephesians chapter 5 in verse 25. We're told, this is an example of what it's supposed to look like in our households. What a wife looks like, what a husband looks like. And he says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. You've proven to be men worthy of keeping your promises. You've proven to be men who stand for truth, who keep commitments. You see, as we rear children, you know, we're told you need to tell children you love them. You need to let them know that they're loved. You need to, you know, you need to display love to them. You need to, you know, provide for them and all of these things and let them know that you love them. The greatest thing that we can do for children is not simply show them that they are loved and tell them that they are loved. Because children can't hear or experience that dad loves them until they know that dad loves their mother. See, when they see that dad loves mom and that he keeps his promises, he keeps his commitment, then they're free to believe him when he says, I love you. That's why God says, husbands, love your wives. Love your wife. You know why? Because you are setting the ultimate example for them. And every relationship that they have is going to be based on the kind of relationship that you have with your mother, with their mother. It's going to be an absolute mirror that is going to be reflected. The relationship that you have with their mom. More than anything, they need to see that. It's the beginning of safety for children. It's where they learn selflessness. When children see a father, when children see men putting their wife first, it's where they learn that behavior. It's where they learn that just because they want something, just because they feel something, doesn't necessarily mean that that's what they're going to get or that's what they're going to do. It's the greatest example they could ever have. Another example that I'm honored to be a part of, I'm honored to be in this room with men who provide the example given to us in Colossians 3 in verse 23, where the Bible tells us, whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart as working for the Lord and not for men. You know, I heard an old saying, you know, that hard work never killed anybody. I mean, dads, we've told our kids that, you know, hey, got to work hard. Hard work never killed anybody. And I always thought, well, you know, why take any chances? I mean, you know, I hear what you're saying, but, you know, hard work never killed anybody. But too often the mentality or the attitude is, well, you know, let's not take any chances on that. But I stand in a room with men worthy of being honored because of a willingness to work hard. And not just a willingness to work hard at careers and at jobs and at amassing wealth and all of those things, but men who have been willing year after year after year to work hard in the ministry and the work of this congregation to build a place where lost and hurting souls can come and can receive help, not only financially, but more important, spiritually. Men who are willing to put in hour after hour, not just at work, but in prayer, doing whatever God has called them to do, knowing that the work they're doing is working for the Lord. And lastly, I want to honor men today simply because God honors you. Because it comes from God. God sees that the responsibility and the example of fatherhood is one that's worthy of being honored. It's one that is worthy of being lifted up. It's one that is worthy of being blessed because it is such a blessing to so many. In Exodus chapter 20 and verse 5, we read a long list of things that are to be done, and you're supposed to, you know, to have no other gods before God. So don't make any graven images or any idols. And he tells them that if we don't lead one generation to God, that generation will be cursed because of the choices that fathers and parents made. But then he goes on to say about the blessing of leading those that we are charged with in the direction that he would have us. He starts out verse 5 by saying that you should not bow down to them, talking about the idols, or worship them. For I am the Lord your God, I'm a jealous God, punishing the children for the sins of the father to the third and fourth generation, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me. You see, where the world chooses to mock the position, the responsibility, the example of fatherhood, God chooses to honor that. God says, you know what I will do? I will bless the generations that come after you because of the person that you are. You know how He does that? He does that as a legacy. You see, the curse that He's talking about, He says, if those who stray from me, those who hate me, I will curse them into the third and fourth generation. You know, not as punishment for the sins of the father, because, you know, God is not, an unfair monster. He's not doing something to somebody because of something else that they didn't do. You know why He says, I will curse them into the third generation? Not as punishment, but as a legacy, as a tradition of behavior. They're cursed as a culture. There's no greater need in this country than for fathers to be more like you guys. You see, if we could take what we have in this room and reproduce that over this nation, oh, what a blessing it would be to thousands upon thousands of generations to come. You know, as I thought about this sermon, as I thought about what can I say to really challenge the men of this congregation, you know what I realized? I realized that I challenge the men of this congregation along with the women every single week, and it's time for us to recognize the fact that in this building today, there are men worthy of honor. In this building today, there are men and women who are worthy of being honored, not only by me, but more importantly than that, recognize the fact that you are honored by God. I stand in a room with men and women who have chosen to bless generations to come, to be selfless, self-sacrificing, generous, compassionate, merciful, and loving. And God says, the children yet unborn will reap a harvest of your blessing. The challenge today is not to the men of this congregation, but it's to the children. Hopefully they just now started paying attention. To the children of this congregation, I want to tell you to honor these men. I want to tell you to honor them with your very lives as they have honored God. You see, we look for heroes, we look for role models in a lot of places. And I want to tell you today, don't look for heroes and role models on television or your favorite sporting team. Don't look for heroes anywhere else but in the seat right next to you, because that's where they are. Maybe they're sitting across this auditorium from you this morning. But look at the men in this room, because they're true heroes. They're examples, shouldering a responsibility given to them by God. And they're not heroes because they seek fame and fortune. And they're not to be emulated and follow their example because of they're seeking money or status. But they're heroes because they're seeking God. And our God honors that. You know, I may have shared this before. The lesson is yours, and I will give you this illustration as we leave. And it's, you know, I struggle with how transparent I can be in the pulpit, and I have a see-through one, so I guess I can be as transparent as I want. But I've shared with you the fact, I believe, that maybe a few years ago, my parents were divorced when I was 2 years old. And I from the time that I was about 2 and a half until I was 23, I never saw or talked to my biological father. There was a lot of mistakes made. Whose fault? I don't know. I don't really care. The fact of the matter is, for 21 years, I never saw him or heard his voice. And it was right before my mother died in 1994 that I decided to pursue a relationship, just to talk to the guy and see, you know, to get his side of it after all of these years, and figure out and maybe find out if there was something that we could maybe be friends or maybe be something. I don't know, but I just had this need. And so I knew where he lived and I knew what his name was, obviously. So I got in the yellow pages or the white pages and found his phone number. I called 411 and I verified that, and I got his number, and I looked at it. I wrote it down on a little yellow sticky note, and I looked at it for like a week before I called him. And finally, I picked up the phone from my office in Columbia, Missouri, and you know, a number that I knew he wouldn't know if it came up on his caller ID. And so at about 6 o'clock one night, I stayed late and everyone else was gone, and I dialed that number. And it rang a couple of times, and a man answered the phone. Now, I haven't heard his voice, and he hasn't heard mine. Last time he saw me, I was like 2 and a half. The man answered the phone. And all I could think to say was, Earl, is that you? And I'll never forget this as long as I live, but the very first word he said, shame? After all those years, no contact whatsoever, my dad knew me. My dad knew me. I will never forget that. You know, he could have done a whole lot better. He could have stayed and fought. He could have made different choices, but there was no escaping the fact that when I called his name, he recognized my voice and he knew me. The reality is that we serve a God. We have an example of a God who knows us. We might not have been as close to Him as we needed to be. We might not have had the relationship that we could have had for all these years, but the reality is that as soon as we call for Him, He knows us. And His response is always yes. This morning, as we honor fathers and men who are making a difference, we can honor our Father in heaven who gives us the ultimate example, who accepts us and loves us and calls us His own. Would you join me as together we stand and as we sing?